The Scirocco tore at the corners of the airplane hangar, screaming vengeance. The howls matched the way Otis Calhoun Lael Miller V's soul shrieked as he watched his best friend's bloody helmet make the rounds through the large, capable hands of his coyote cowboy brothers. Like most of his team, his head was bowed as if in silent prayer, although he knew none. It was far too late anyway. Using peripheral vision, he watched the helmet's progress as each of his teammates drew a slip of paper out of the helmet. Jace's amends, or vows, plans that he'd never get the chance to complete. Calhoun's throat squeezed and his chest felt crushed. His eyes burned. Sand, yeah. Not tears. Millers didn't cry. They tamed land, ran cattle, built towns and then cities, racked up architecture awards, had Emmy award-winning shows based on their lives. The Lael side of his family crafted award-winning wines in several different states and two countries. They launched fashion houses and brands that were global and every celebrity it girl's wet dream. If either side of his ambitious, famous, and extravagantly wealthy family was asked, and he doubted they had thought about him in years, he would be the underachiever. By design. He'd walked away at 18, dumping Otis and Lael and the Roman numeral and any stake in the empire. His family wouldn't consider that not dying in the desert or jungle or mountain pass in a country few Americans could find on a map counted as an achievement. Ditto for saving the lives of people who weren't and never would be shareholders. Calhoun had built his own ladder of success, until it had crashed down on him because he'd gone with instinct, not training. When his team had received faulty intel or had been compromised, and the mission had spun south, he'd run to protect his military dog instead of his team leader. Seeing Duke take two hits, he'd slithered into his lizard brain, sprayed the field with returning fire, and launched himself into Duke's position, slapped two pressure field bandages on him, picked him up, and called for an emergency extraction, before he realized Jace and Huck had been hit. Pinned down because he'd given their enemy a clear shot at their position with his Spider-Man leap, Calhoun, whispering reassurances to Duke, had dug in and kept returning fire while Huck worked on Jace, and Rohan crept to higher ground to pick off the two nests of snipers so Huck could retreat with Jace. They'd had to shoot their way out to the extraction point. Duke had made it. Jace hadn't. And Huck never said a word about it to command. Another team had completed their mission, a first for the Coyote Cowboys unit. And Calhoun would have to exit his prestigious service career with that stain on his soul, if not his record. He'd planned to muster out along with Jace McBride, one of the best friends a man could have. But Jace was gone, and Duke's career was over, though he'd survived the two surgeries that might save his life. It was touch and go, and despite the gravity of this morning's situation, Calhoun kept looking at his phone for updates from the vets team. He dragged in a ragged breath and out of the corner of his eye saw Wolf Conti, the new temporary team leader, focus on him. Damn. He angled his shoulders back, spine rigid. He was a sequoia standing vigil for centuries, unbowed by fire, earthquakes, storms, or anything else God or fate wanted to toss at him. Wolf didn't speak. He rarely did, only when necessary. Calhoun waited, pretending to be at ease. Wolf inclined his head, pivoted, and walked outside the hangar while the other Coyote Cowboys finished their beers and waited for the plane carrying Jace to finish preparations for takeoff. Calhoun followed. Dr. Jory Quinn stripped off her scrubs, peeled off her cotton bodysuit, balled it up into a small webbed bag that she tucked into her gym bag to hand wash when she got home, and then slid her feet into her Okabee silver flip-flops with the frivolous flowers, one of her few financial splurges in life, and stepped under a cool shower,